Welcome to the Fox Pro Podcast, brought to you by Fox Pro Game Calls.
Hello, everyone. I'm John Collins. Welcome back to the Fox Pro Podcast. On this episode, we have Bo McGuffey, the host of Strutting in the Bluegrass, joining us. What's going on, Bo? You doing all right?
I'm good, man. How's everything in your world?
Wet and rainy today.
Well, we live close enough to one another. I know exactly what you mean. It's not a very pretty spring day, that's for sure.
Yeah, Bo's just sitting probably 20 minutes from me, maybe 25 at the most, just in the neighboring county. And we've had, it was cold yesterday, a little cool this morning, had some rain come through, and I think supposed to be back up in the 70s tomorrow, though. Them turkeys ought to be hammering in the morning.
I know. Yeah, tomorrow's supposed to get nice and warm, and then I think we got a lot of rain, but then I already looked Sunday. It's supposed to be, you know, supposed to clear out Saturday afternoon, and Sunday looks clear and nice, so I've already got plans to be out Sunday morning listening, because they ought to be gobbling pretty good.
You're dang right. It's that time of year, and guys and gals, Bo is the host of Kentucky Department of Fish and Wildlife spring show called Strutting in the Bluegrass. Strutting is a 7-show series where they film the first 7 days of Kentucky spring turkey season. They film the shows that morning, get the show edited up midday, and then actually put that show out that they filmed that morning. They put it out that afternoon. It's a pretty wild series. Bo, you about ready to get that thing started for this year?
We're ready, or we think we're ready. You know what I mean? It's but like you said, it's you know, you look at producing shows, and heck, you know this, and you all are as good as anybody at putting out, you know, recent content, but you go to a format of where, okay, we're going out in the morning and we're going to film that morning's action, and we need to produce a show that evening. It's, you know, you got to come up with some material and some content, and heck, if you've turkey hunted long enough, you know, you'll have some mornings where things don't go right. So we think we're ready. We, you know, we've been planning it for a while and sort of got our properties lined out and sort of a schedule. We're going to hunt with some different people this year. So, we're ready for it. So, you know, just excited to get into it.
Yep. It's going to be the fourth season of strutting.
Yep. Fourth year. It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. It, actually the first two seasons of it, I actually helped Bo with that. Me and Bo were actually the co-host of Strutting. I moved on here to a position at Fox Pro and got away from that. But Fox Pro actually still sponsors that show. We sponsor them with turkey calls. And man, it's a series. I kind of miss being part of it. But at the same time, it's so hectic and it's a little stressful. It's a little stressful. So I'm not really missing that, but I sure do miss hunting with you guys and putting that show on. It's a great show. You guys need to check it out this spring when it starts. When does it start up, Bo? What is opening day?
Opening day this year in Kentucky is April 15th. So it'll kick off that day. And you know, it's one thing if anybody's, you know, of course on Facebook, one thing we do with it as well, we'll do that show that night, but middle of the day, late morning, we'll actually do a Facebook Live, and we go live for 15 to 20 minutes. And the one thing that I've really started enjoying with those lives during the year is it's really neat because, you know, you get people commenting from all across the state of what they're seeing, what they're hearing, what birds are doing in their area. And it's sort of neat. You get on there and maybe you've had a bad morning or somebody on there's had a slow morning and they see somebody else had some action. It can be encouraging to them. So, but the Facebook Lives are a big part of that as well. So, right. Starts April 15th. And like you said earlier, we'll go 7 days, first 7 days of season, and we'll produce a show each day of that opening week.
Yep. It's pretty much as live as you can get. Besides for just streaming it as it happens. I mean, you get to see that action that afternoon and they got to put down that morning. And you guys can watch that on Kentucky Department of Fish and Wildlife's Facebook page, their Instagram page, and their YouTube channel. So
their YouTube channel, that's right.
Be sure to check that out here just next month, here in just a few weeks.
Just a few weeks.
Yeah, it'll be so, here before you know it. That's for sure.
Yes, actually, my son is still 15. So youth weekend is April 1st and 2nd for Kentucky. So we've already got plans. You know, we're going to hunt that weekend, and we won't put that show out till opening week. Hopefully, we get all bird and produce a show.
Right.
But we'll include that hunt hopefully during the week. So, but yeah, I mean, less than 2 weeks, we'll be hunting.
Awesome, awesome! Can't wait for it to get started. Well, yep. Bo, we've done quite a bit of hunting together over the years, haven't we?
A little bit.
that's another thing, Bo. Bo's one of my best friends I got, and plus we're cousins. We're first cousins. His dad, my mom, are brother and sister, and we pretty much grew up together and grew up in the outdoors together.
Yeah, no, especially turkey hunting, and I'm sure we'll talk about it at some point. Lord, we learned to turkey hunt together. We didn't even know what we were doing, but yeah, it's funny because you know the success you've had. I'm super proud of you, but people. You know, like I said, we grew up together. We got pictures of standing around, you know, when we were kids together. And people ask me, so you know John Collins? I said, yeah, I know him a little bit. I know the boy a little bit. So,
right,
but yeah.
Right.
So, no, we grew up together. Like I said, the turkey hunting thing, yeah, we basically learned that whole process right beside each other.
Yep. And another wild thing is me and Bo, I shared my first real deal coyote stand with Bo many moons ago, and
right.
I don't know if it left the same impact on you, Bo, but if you remember, on our very first stand, we called in 7 coyotes.
It was a crazy morning. It really was. But I remember that like it was yesterday. We both got lucky and killed deer that year and was tagged out. And we said, let's try this thing. And I don't know if you remember or not, but we literally had a primo's mouth call.
I couldn't remember what it was. I just remember it was just some kind of wooden tube, cottontail distress.
Yeah, that's all it was. It was just, yeah. And there we went with 2 deer rifles, and then several years later, heck, your work, you know, that's what you do for a living. It's pretty neat.
But it was wild. I said, we actually called in 7 coyotes on our first coyote stand, and we unloaded. I tell you how crazy we was. You know, of course, didn't have no money. We was young, and Bo was packing if I remember right, a 30-30 Winchester lever action, model 94, and I actually had a 243 and 22 250, a few things my dad's, but didn't have no ammo for none of them. And just so happened that this is going to sound wild to people, but the only rifle besides for a 22 long rifle I had in the house that I had ammo for was had a rifle sitting there of my uncle's. It was a Weatherby Mark IV or something. I don't know. One of them fancy Weatherby guns chambered in 300 Weatherby Magnum. So, after all the smoke cleared and them 7 coyotes come running in, everything, you know, it got chaotic quick. Anyway, he unloaded at 30-30, and I unloaded at 300 Weatherby. We only had 2 coyotes laying on the ground when the smoke cleared. Yeah. But I tell you what, man, you thought we killed 2 big Boone and Crockett bucks. Yeah.
I'll say this, the one you shot, he didn't go nowhere. He wasn't running.
No.
So, that's pretty neat. I hadn't thought about that in quite a while. That's pretty.
The one that got shot that lever action 30-30 didn't either, because he run up there to 30 steps from us. Bo shot him right in the chest.
Yeah. That's pretty neat. I hadn't thought about that in quite a while.
Yeah. But, we started turkey hunting together at a really young age. We were teenagers, early teens. And
Early teens. I wasn't close to having my driver's license.
And I tell you what, pretty much the person that kind of got us into it or had a big part of getting us started in turkey hunting was your grandpa.
My grandpa. That's right.
This time of year in March and early April, we get to ride around Bo's grandpa. And, you know, my area of Kentucky really didn't – my part where I lived at and grew up really didn't have that many turkeys. But, you know, I go over and visit you guys and your grandpa get to riding us around and – man, we'd spend the whole weekend looking for turkeys and finding these, you know, it was wild.
No, it was literally, you know, it had the same impact on you as it did me. And I don't think we even realized at the time, but you're right. My grandpa, and of course people can relate, you know, my grandpa, he had never even seen a wild turkey. He said, you know, he can recall the first time somebody told him about one, he thought they were lying. And And I can still remember the first time he showed me one, and he was, you remember, he was amazed by them. And the funny thing is, he never killed one.
Yep.
He never killed one. But you're right. He would haul me and you around. And I, you know, the first time we saw him strutting really the first time we had one gobble, it was done, you know, it was just hooked for life. And, but you're right. We would ride around, you know, there was no season in some of the counties we live, you know, where we live, but we would spend all spring just riding around and watching them. And was just, you know, just amazed by them. And, but you're right. That's what got it all started with us.
Yep. And finally, when we could hunt them here close to home and had a season and huntable population, we've been pouring it to them ever since.
I mean, I don't know how long you went, John, but I mean, you know, like I said, I was a kid, you know, whenever we started, you're 4 years older than me.
No.
Three and some change. Okay.
Yeah, three in a month.
Okay. Fair enough. But you know, I mean, the first few years, I mean, John, I hunted 4 years before I heard one gobble while hunting. You know, we just didn't have no birds to hunt. I remember that year you killed a Jake, and heck, we looked at that thing like it was a 160-inch whitetail.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I got pretty lucky. You know, I'm probably a lot better hunter than you are.
I actually killed one
the first year, but it was pure luck, and it was a great big old fat Jake, and it's like you said, you know, it was actually the second hunt. First hunt went out and had zero luck. Second day went out mid morning, you know, got lucky enough to get on a bird, heard birds gobbling, and caught a Jake, a strutting gobbling Jake. And man, oh man, hooked on that ever since. I mean, I was already hooked. I was just riding around and watching turkeys, listening to turkeys, but when I actually got one to flopping, it was just a game changer.
Yeah. No, so it started early on. Listen, like I said, my grandpa, you know, every spring, I don't know about you, you know, when he passed a few years ago, but every spring he comes back to me pretty good, because when I think about springtime and turkey hunting, I think about him a lot, because he put a lot of time in riding me and you around and showing, you know, and just letting us look at him and watch him, and he loved, you know, he loved wild turkey just as much as we did.
Yeah. I thank old Paul Jimmy for that. I definitely
that's right.
Thank him for getting us started in turkey hunting, that's for sure. So, speaking of all that, what does turkey hunting mean to Bo McGuffey?
Man, that's a good question. You know, I'm sure you're the same way, but it just does my soul good, man. I'm telling you, you come out of winter, the woods and the fields and everything's come back to life, and to see turkeys strutting and gobbling, it puts a new fire in me each year. But it's something that literally, like, you know, I sit in a deer stand, you know, I love to deer hunt, but I'm thinking about turkey season. Beside, you know, after my faith in God, my family, turkey hunting it's right there. It's something I truly, truly love and have a passion for, and look forward to it every year. I'm sure you're like me. I've thought before, like, you know, as I get older, wonder if I'm going to keep love chasing those things like I always have. And it's every year. I think I enjoy it more and more.
Right.
I really do. I saw a flock with a couple birds strut another day, and I pulled over and watched them for 10 minutes. I really, like I said, going back to my grandpa, turkey hunting means the world to me. So, and it's, you know, when you think about the relationship it helped build with you and I, and then new friends over the years, you know, you introduced Merle Hacker to me.
Yep.
He helps me on that show. It's just stuff like that. Now, turkey hunting is a big, big part of my life, and something I'm so thankful for.
Yep, for sure. That's good stuff. Let's talk about a little bit, you know, get in depth, kind of talk about turkey scouting and what goes on through the season and stuff. How important do you feel like turkey scouting for turkeys is to your success throughout the year, and especially the success for strutting in the bluegrass? You know, that's such a big deal for, you know, it's just 7 days and you got to put a show out all 7 days. There's a lot of planning goes into that, and scouting plays a huge, huge role in it.
You know, there's, I mean, you know this, you know, there's, you know, tons of people that hunt and a lot, and there's lots of dedicated turkey hunters out there. Lots of people love to chase turkeys, but you know, the vast majority of people in my circle, they love to deer hunt and they, you know, they turkey hunt in the spring because they enjoy it. But I don't think people understand how important scouting is with success in turkey hunting. Because like I said, all those people with deer hunting, man, they're all about scouting. They'll scout, in the, you know, they scout winter through spring and start developing plans. But it comes to turkey hunting, you know, a lot of people look at it as, ah, let's just show up and see if they gobble and see if we can't get on one. And that works. I mean, heck, we do that too. But as far as success, man, I'm telling you, your scouting is – it can make or break it, in my opinion. And being, well, I'll say this, and being successful on a consistent basis is probably a better way to put it. And I tell people all the time, one of the things people always talk about is, you know, how you call, you know, what kind of calls you use, and is there a certain, you know, vocabulary you use more than another with turkeys. And if you want to be a good turkey caller, in my opinion, know where a turkey wants to be. Know where he wants to go, and it makes your calling so much easier.
Right.
And you know, I learned one of the things I learned years ago, and you know, you and I talk about it all the time. But you know, the first few years of hunting, you know, even after I killed a bird or two, it was still a struggle to kill a turkey. You know, and so before season, you'd start, you know, going out in the mornings and listening and watching turkeys, and you start going, man, that bird, he goes to that field every morning.
Right.
You know, or he's gobbling on that ridge every morning because he's not been bumped.
Right.
And it's like, okay, when I scout, I'm not going to go in there and bother that turkey. I'm going to stay way back here away from him. And when it comes time
scout,
to kill him,
scout from afar.
Scout from afar, just like, you know, hey, guys do it out west all the time on big game animals. It's the same concept. But I'm going to scout from afar, and that bird, man, he really likes that little corner of that field. Why? I don't know, you know, and all of a sudden you start putting it together, and you get in that corner of that field where that bird's comfortable. And man, you talk about so much easier to call him to a spot where he's comfortable and uses on a regular basis, as opposed to trying to call him 300 yards across that field to a spot that he usually don't go.
That's it. That's exactly right. You got to, you know, get in there and get to scout and keep tabs on where birds gobble from, where they roost at, where they gobble from. Keep track of where they, when they fly off the roost, you know, waking up in the morning and time to go be a turkey. Keep tabs on where they fly to. And then the next thing is where, you know, where them hens and gobblers like to feed, you know, walk off to start feeding, strut zones, all that type of stuff. Tie all that stuff together to really increase your odds on a big old gobbler.
And, you know, and something else, John, that, you know, we've learned over the years is you'd go deer hunt a farm and it'd be full of turkeys. You know, you'd see turkeys every time you deer hunt it.
Yep.
Well, you'd show up in the spring and there wouldn't be a turkey on the place. And you'd think, man, this place ought to have turkeys all over it. Well, you're scouting. You know, there's farms that in the fall will hold birds, but come spring, those birds aren't there.
Right.
They move off to different, because, you know, maybe they don't have the nesting habitat or even brooding habitat to raise their little ones, and or the food sources change, that sort of thing. And you're scouting. Guess what? It'll save you from going to a farm that ain't got no turkeys.
Oh, for sure. And that's when you got to do the – I mean, there's nothing wrong with keeping tabs on turkeys in the fall and winter.
Yeah.
But the bulk of your scouting for turkeys needs to happen right now, that's all the way leading up to season.
That's right. Yeah.
And just like you said, putting yourself in position where a turkey feels comfortable. You can take the best turkey caller on the planet, whoever won Nationals and the world championships this year, put them in a Walmart parking lot, and then take a sorry turkey collar that can barely squeak and squawk on a mouth diaphragm, and put them right in the spot where a bird likes to, a strut zone, or where they like to fly off to. Guess who's gonna have the better chance of killing a bird? And call
That's right.
Up. He's gonna, that sorry collar is gonna look like a pro when a world champion can't do nothing.
Yep. That's right. And I'll tell you another thing, just in the last, I don't know, 5 or 6 years, I really started keying in on while I scout, John, and you know, you have too, is, so if I got, you know, if I got a certain piece of property and I go there and there's two gobblers you know, running together on that property. And every time they see a jake or another longbeard, they run them off. I know those birds are aggressive. And so guess what? When I go in there, I'm going to have me a jake decoy.
Yep.
Because you know, from your scouting, you know the demeanor of those turkeys.
Right.
And it could be just the opposite. It could be a long, you might have a piece of property, a longbeard that's got ran off, and that's just where he's ended up. And he don't want to fight.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? You go in there with just a single hen, leave the jake decoy at home. That could determine success on that turkey. And like I said, that's just all from scouting. It's just learning those turkeys before season opens up.
Well, let's transition to that since you brought that up. Let's talk about decoys. You don't have to talk about brands or nothing like that, but tell us what your decoy spread looks like. What's your decoy setup look like as far as hens, jakes, toms, strutters? Yeah. You know, tell us what you like to run.
I haven't used a strutter a whole lot. I have a little bit with you in the past. Yep. My primary setup is a jake decoy with a hen on the ground in front of him. And I've gotten just in the last 2 to 3 years, I have a feeding hen as well.
Yep.
And I will take her and set her. I might set her 20 yards.
Just off to the side.
Off to the side of my spread. And, if you could, you can actually go back and watch our hunts from last year. But last year, there was a lot of jakes in our area.
Yep.
And two different occasions, turkeys that we called in, they came into our spread, but they did not come in and flog that jake decoy, but they come in strutting and simply got between that jake decoy and that feeding hen and just went over to that feeding hen. And basically, I don't know this, but in my head, they were just trying to cut that hen off.
Trying to split her off,
right, Right. So I think it really made a difference there. But going back to your original question, a jake decoy with a hen laying on the ground and that feeding hen off to the side is the primary spread that I use. But like I said, I'm not scared to maybe go with just a single hen. And I tell you what, John, there's been times I've just stuck the jake out.
Oh, yeah.
And that's success. So.
And what Bo's talking about when he's talking about his jake, it's like a half strut or three quarter strut jake is what it is. And me and Bo have actually run that style of spread for years, several years. And just to reiterate that, what we're doing is taking that half strut, three quarter jake, and we usually set them pretty close. I don't know if we're lazy or what. We don't take them out to about 12, 15 yards. We're going to put that jake out there, and then we're going to take a hen, like an upright hen, but we're not putting a stake in the ground. We're just putting that hen straight on the ground, just like she's laid down there ready for that that jake to breed. And then we're taking just a feeding hen and just kind of putting it off to the side, left or right, just pretty much how you actually place them out there as far as distance from you, angles, and where you put that feeder hen off to the side, and actually how you place the jake itself has to do with where you've got that bird roosted at or where your bird is gobbling at and how he's going to approach. Because a lot of times I've noticed, Bo, and I know you've noticed this as well, just make sure I'm right. A lot of times if that bird's going to come up there and whoop up on that jake, he usually comes from the backside of it. He don't come right towards the head of it. He comes towards the tail end of it.
Years ago, if you remember reading, we used to read articles and stuff about turkey hunting, and they always talked about how he would come to the front of it. And I'm like you. So often I see that bird come up from behind him. You're right. And then come in front of him. But yeah, he'll approach from that back. You're exactly right.
Yeah, I actually like to set that jake wherever I think that bird's going to come to. I want him to either see the side profile of that jake or see the back end of it. I don't want to have to walk, make a circle to come around it.
Yeah. And, one thing I'll add to that real quick, and it really wasn't to do with your question, but one thing, especially if there's anybody going to listen that's sort of new into turkey hunting, that feeding hen, something to think about is, or this is what I do, and you might add something to it. I put that feeding hen off to the side of, depending on if you're right or left-handed, where you can swing to her. You don't want to put her to the side where you can't swing, and now the bird circles in, and you're sort of, locked down. So think about whenever you put your decoys out, think about, okay, I can swing right or I can swing left. So it just like, again, going back to success, that those little things can really make a difference in throwing one over your shoulder or not.
Yeah, and that really has to do, when we're talking about that type of stuff, what it really has to do with is how many jakes you got in your area. Like Bo said, let's back it up 2 or 3 years. We didn't have as good a hatches, and there wouldn't be these big group, you know, I call them gangs of jakes. You know, if you start getting these groups of 3, 4, 5, 6, and even bigger groups of jakes, they're looking for fights. You know, they'll usually run around and they're whooping up every tom at a gobble or strut. You know, they're bad news. And so a lot of times when you do have a lot of jakes, especially these bigger group of jakes that are pretty mean, a lot of times your toms aren't as vocal. And if they do come into a decoy spread, they can be a little iffy with that jake. You know, they're afraid they're, the rest of the bunch is there and they're going to get whooped up on. So that's what he's talking about. They'll come in and they'll actually still come into the spread, but they're not coming in there to whoop that jake decoy. That's they're coming to split off that feeder hen to take her off somewhere. But
they're wanting to cut her out of there and just take her off and not have no altercation or not bring no more
that's
attention
right.
to it.
But if your jake numbers are low, or even if they're not low, you just don't have a big gang of them on your property that you're hunting. Boy, when that long beard comes in there, he's going to put a spur on that jake decoy. He's going to be biting its head. He's going to be flogging it with these wings. I mean, it's a spectacle.
Yes. Yeah. That gets me excited just thinking about that.
I mean, hey, Bo, I don't know how many toms we have shot off the top of a jake decoy. I'm talking about standing on a jake decoy.
Yeah, that's what I said a minute ago. I'm telling you, that's a huge, I don't know, 10 years ago, I'd said there's no way I'd just put a jake out by himself, but a jake decoy can be really effective if used right.
Yep. And the only other type of decoy spread that me and Bo have run in the past, and I still run every once in a while, and it depends on what type of turkeys I'm hunting, whether it's big, if there's groups of toms, like there's like a group of 3 or 4 toms or single toms, or if there's jakes in the area, all that stuff kind of comes into play. But one thing I'll do, I will substitute that half strut, 3/4 strut jake for a full strutter. But the thing I do different than a lot of people does with the full strutter, my strutter is actually still a jake. It's a jake body. It's actually a jake full strut decoy. It's a smaller body decoy. It's got a little bitty old stubby beard sticking out. But what I do different is I don't put a jake fan in it. I still put a full tom fan in it. So what it makes out to be is just a subordinate tom. It's a little it's a little bitty body tom with a, you know, good tail fan, and something about that little setup there usually drives the turkeys pretty wild, and you're usually shooting a gobbler right off the top of him.
Yeah, and the thing about that decoy, man, when it works, it works. Not to do a bunch of stories and all that stuff, but, man, you can't mention a full strutter without that. The first thought I have is Merle, that bird that come running full strutter. It was as pretty as – I mean, you couldn't draw it up no better, and he missed that turkey, and I still laugh at that. All the time.
He slick missed him. After that bird whooped up on it, he got the fever, that's for sure. But I tell you what, my favorite spot to put them out is when you do have a group of gobblers. You know, everybody gets in those. If I got a single tom somewhere, I'll usually use the half strut, 3/4 strut jake. But if I've got a group, if it's 2, 3, 4 birds, I'm going to put that full strutter out. They usually won't tolerate that. They're going to come, you know, you still got to call that bird in. But if you can call them in to where they see that decoy spread, it's over. They're going to come whoop up on it. And one thing it reminds me of is that second season of strutting in the bluegrass on opening morning. We had set up on four toms that we had roosted the morning before or the evening before. And what happened? We ended up having one tom standing on our hen that we had on the ground, breeding it. And then we had another tom standing on old Ricky Bobby. That's what we nicknamed that decoy.
On standing on top of that full strut decoy. Yeah, that was crazy. But like you said, that group of gobblers, and it goes back, you know, goes back to scouting. We knew that those 4 longbeards ran in there, and when they came in that field with their hens and there stood that other strutter, I mean, they marched right to him.
Yep. It was pretty memorable hunt right there.
Yeah.
Let's go back. We talked about the scouting. We've talked about our decoy spreads and stuff like that. Now, you know, talking about setting up on roosted birds there a little bit. You know, we just talked about that. But what about these pieces of property that maybe you didn't get to scout? You know, a lot of people's got a pretty heavy work schedule and they can't just go out and scout like some other people can. What about that hunting ground that you haven't been able to scout too much, or just that running and gunning style hunting? You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, no, because you're right. All of us don't work for Fox Pro and get to scout every day and hunt. So some of us have to keep the world going, John. Yeah. But you're right. You the vast majority of hunters, you know, it's hard to scout a whole lot. It is because it does take time. And you know, John, even with all the scouting you've done before season and myself, still you get into season, you think, hey, man, we ain't hit that piece of property. Let's go try it. Or, you know, a lot of people hunting public ground, they may strike out on a new piece of public ground.
And other things, like if you might do all the scouting in the world to try to make it all come together on opening morning, and, you know, your turkey doesn't cooperate that day.
Right, that's right.
But hens drag him off, coyote eats him, whatever happens.
That's right. And you got to get a plan B. That's exactly right. So last year, you know, I hunted a piece of property that I'd never hunted before and actually didn't get permission to hunt it until the Sunday before season opened. And then, like you said, that week during work, it was hard to get down there. So literally the first time I ever stepped foot on it was the day before season, and a beautiful piece of property. But like you said, had never scouted it. And basically, you know, looked at it on one of the property apps where you can look at, the lay of the land, look at Google Earth, and noticed some different attributes of it, sort of the ridge tops and where a couple fields were and things of that nature. And as I hunted, as I approached that property, John, I knew I had an idea it was going to be good. So I did not go in there just guns a-blazing and running all over the place. Started out and hunted it very conservative, sort of middle of property, and just listened. And there was didn't hunt it the first day, but went down there the evening. And in one of those little fields, a bird was gobbling. So sort of made note of it. And went back the second day and got on some turkeys, but couldn't do nothing with them. But again, back in that, there was a corner where there's a little pasture field, and heard a bird gobble like two times back there. So now, again, putting a pattern together, we said, hey, a couple of different times we've been here, back there on that corner, there's been a bird gobbling. Well, there was this particular property, another individual could hunt it. So went in there to hunt him on Monday morning, and the guy drove his truck across the field. Literally sitting there with decoys out, and the man drove his truck across the field, okay? So we said, all right, let's give him a break. But what we did, we had another day. We slipped down there middle of the day, and said, let's go back there. Let's slip in to that little pasture field. Let's get back in there and get set up, and we'll just do some blind calling, and we'll see if we can't get that thing going, that bird going. And so as we went in, we took our time really slow, and listening and watching, and was able to sneak into that pasture field, get set up. And John, I think I called one time, no response. And about 15 minutes later, on his own, bird gobbles on his own.
Nice.
And I said, okay. So, you know, I don't know that he heard us before, or maybe he just got by himself, or what's going on, but he's not far. Called to him, I think cut to him and ran a set of yelps at him. And it was a matter of minutes, and that bird was standing in front of us on our decoys. But again, it goes back. We had never been on that property. Sort of looked at it, like I said, on Google Earth, just looking how the land laid. Went into it conservative, didn't go running all over the place, didn't go out walking every ridge top, you know, and just sort of scouted as we hunted, to be honest.
Right.
And learned it as we went. But like I said, a couple of trips in, just paying attention to what that bird was doing, and had him dead within a couple of hunts.
Right.
So I'm not, I don't want to say I'm super conservative turkey hunting. I like to move, and I like to, you know, get after them. I don't like to deer hunt them. But at the same time, if I know I got a piece of property that could be decent, I'm not going to go in there and ruin it. I'm going to take my time with it.
Right, right. And you, I think that's a good point, doing some scouting with maps, like Onyx maps and stuff like that, to help you learn the lay of the land and finding places where you think turkey might like to frequent. And it helps you put plan together. Right. You get that plan together, and you come in and just start, you know, come in on the property, let out some yelps, cut at them, whatever, see if you can get a bird to strike. Nothing happens. Move however far you think you can before you need to call again. Just see if you can't get one going. Once you get a bird struck, if he's in a spot that you think you can get on him, pour it to him. You know, I think it's one of those things, you know, if it's just because you strike a bird doesn't mean you need to go in there and just, if you know it's not going to work, don't pressure him. I mean, try him some other time.
That's a great point.
But yeah, running and gunning, hunting can be a lot of fun. You know, there's nothing better. You go onto a place and say you're wanting to work this ridge. It looks really good, and you get there on the property and you let out some calls. Nothing answers back. You go on in there a few hundred yards, try it again. Nothing. Walk another couple hundred yards, let out a few yelps. Nothing. Then you cut at him, get a little bit more serious, and all of a sudden he cuts you off with that double. Game's on, son. I mean, that's a great feeling right there.
And that's a great point what you just made, because there's a couple things to that. Is, you know, it's easy to go to a property and call one time and nothing there, say, ain't nothing here. But like you said, if the land lays where you can move some, I mean, simply, you don't think it, but you might move 200 yards and it make all the difference in how that bird hears you. And who's to say he didn't answer you the first time with the lay of land? You just didn't hear him.
Right.
But yeah, you know, like you said, going back to running and gunning, if you take your time, don't be crazy with it, and slipping out a ridge like that and cutting at them, you can easily strike a bird and have him almost run over top of you. But like you said, that's a great point you made about if just because he gobbles does not mean you have to go in there and try to kill him. If the setup's not right, don't ruin it.
Yeah, they can become so call shy
that's
so
right.
Easily. There ain't no sense trying to force something that ain't gonna work.
That's right.
Well, tell us about not all states allow this, but our state of Kentucky, you can hunt all day. You can hunt afternoons.
Yeah.
Some places you can only hunt mornings, but for people that can hunt afternoons, what do you think about afternoon turkey hunting?
Man, you know, I've gotten to where I really, each year I enjoy it a little more, to be honest. And don't get me wrong, at daylight I want to be out there just because I think it's special just being in the spring woods at daylight when everything wakes up and turkeys are gobbling on the limb. But I've gotten to where I really enjoy the afternoon hunting, the middle of the afternoon hunting, and even the later, you know, hunting of the evening. But one of my favorite times in the middle of the day, especially as our season progresses and those gobblers start to lose their hens, you take 10, 11 o'clock, you know, they start losing hens and striking one in the middle of the day. But as far as, you know, late afternoon and evening hunting, one of the things I've gotten to where the way I hunt that, John, is, and you know this, you might have an area where a gobbler, he flies down with hens in the woods or something and you can't do nothing with them. But all of a sudden, you know, as you hunt, you just like a couple afternoons in a row or something, like, golly, that bird, you know, he's come to that field two or three evenings in a row now. And so basically, especially you get a day with the sun out and it's pretty warm, they're not going to be in the fields, you know, with it really warm, slip in there middle of the afternoon, whenever, you know, he's not in the field and whether using decoys or not, and then that late, when that, you know, the shadows start getting in that field, it's very common. All of a sudden he steps in the field and then you can have a great hunt by hunting late in the day.
Yep. Yep. And you made a good point. When it gets warm in the spring, the sun's beating down, them old gobblers get hot. They like to cling to the shadows, to the shade.
That's right. and going on that, you know, most people know, but if you're new to it, you take a rainy day, birds are going to go to the fields. But the, like you said, going back to your original question, the afternoons, evenings, I've gotten to where I really enjoy the afternoon and the evenings. And, you know, as we get older, I'm not going to lie, sometimes I really enjoyed finding a good spot to set up of an afternoon or an evening, and just sit there and chill out for a little bit and call a little and just see what happens.
Right. Me personally, I do like afternoon turkey hunting, but if it gets too late, I'm not to hit those fields after it gets real late in the day, like what you're talking about, just because my mind starts transitioning into
roosting
that bird. Yeah, I'm going to see if I can't roost it. But those early afternoons and mid-afternoons, man, if you can get a bird to gobble after lunch,
yeah.
If you can get, put it this way, if you can strike a bird, one gobbles at you, and then you give him just a few seconds there or a minute or two, and you call at him again, kind of heat checking him, if that bird immediately answers you back, man, that's a dead turkey right there, son.
You better get ready. You better get ready.
Yeah.
And you're exactly right. Because I agree 100%. If it gets late, you need to, in my opinion, depending on how many days you got to hunt and whether you have to place to yourself, there's factors. But I'm like you, I go, my mind goes to roosting, but you know, my mind does go back to a bird I killed, you know, the property I used to be able to hunt behind my house. You remember that piece, big cattle farm, very wide open. But it had a bird that used it. Every evening I would go back there, that bird was there. But in the mornings, he would fly down on the neighbor with those hens. And right. I couldn't hunt the neighbor's property. So there was no sense in me going there and, you know, calling to that turkey and getting him used to my calling. But I said, hey, listen, I can't hunt this bird of the morning. I have to hunt him of the evening. But basically going again on scouting, I said, okay, I'm going in there, and we'd go in there I went in there one time, middle of the afternoon, got set up, and just like clockwork, like he'd always done the evening, here they come feeding over on this cattle pasture. And as soon as he come in there and he saw a Jake decoy and called to him and he come running and had him killed. But there's different, you know, there's different variables to each piece of property you hunt. And an evening hunt could lend itself, you know, to be the best option for you. So absolutely don't think, turkeys don't gobble as often in the evening, so I'm not going to hunt. It might be the time to kill a bird on a certain piece of property.
That's for sure. And maybe, afternoons and evenings on the time you got to hunt. Maybe that's what it takes to fill your turkey tags you're wanting to fill. But I will say one thing. I do like killing them in the morning. I tell you what's one of the best things about it. There's a lot of good things about it, like just hearing the woods come to life and all that type of stuff. But, you know, I like to eat. I'm a fan of eating.
There you go.
I like breakfast, and there's nothing better than being, say, 8:30, 9 o'clock, being sitting in a diner in one of these old, you know, greasy spoon gas stations down here that always serve breakfast, be sitting there in your camo, and there's always that one old-timer, or maybe two or three of them. Boys, y'all been out turkey hunting? Oh, yeah, we've been getting after them. Then he looked at it and said, y'all out awful early, and he's still been there after them. Yeah, one in the back of the truck. It's time to eat eggs over easy bacon and toast.
That's right. You all over it. That's right.
Then you get to tell about turkey hunting story. You go out there and check them out. Yeah, it's just part of it, you know. I love everything about that turkey hunting, you know.
Yeah.
It's a special season, that's for sure.
The old timers are fun, but I don't know. It's probably wrong, but I even like it too. When all of a sudden here comes two or three more in camo, and the first thing they say is, "Oh, you can't kill them this morning, can you? They ain't doing nothing." And so, I don't know. We had a pretty good morning, you know. So yeah, I know what you mean. Let me tell you something. It's that because you know how it is. You roost one, and you think, okay, I think I know what he's going to do, and where we're going to set up. And whenever you get him roosting, you go in the next morning, he starts gobbling. And that first gobble of when you know he's coming your direction and you say, okay.
Yep. Yep.
He's headed our way right off the roost. That's, yeah.
Yeah, there's definitely key times in turkey hunting that I look for. I've already thought about for the upcoming season. The first one is you're sitting there in the dark and you're starting to see a little bit more, birds start waking up, songbirds get to chirping and singing and carrying on, and you're sitting there thinking, man, I hope I sit up in the right spot. I know I roosted this bird. He should just be like 150 yards, 200 yards right over here to the right. I hope he's there, but I don't know. And it gets a little bit more light, birds are still chattering. You're sitting there thinking, do I tree up to him? Do I call? Man, I wish the crows would get him fired up. Or I wish an owl would hoot. Should I owl hoot? You know, you're starting to get worried, and all of a sudden, just out of the blue, right there he is, son. He's right there where you thought he was going to be. Right there, you know, it kind of jump starts you, gets you, you know, will spark to your heart. And then the next part is just what you said. When you know that bird's getting closer, when he's answered your call and he's getting closer every time, that's that next part. And I tell you what, is when that tail fan – tip of that tail fan starts coming over her eyes or around the corner, you're like, ain't no better sight than that right there.
The tail fan, and one that always gets me is when you see the crown of that head. When it's in the woods, it is as white as a brand new baseball. And when you see that sucker come, it's just gleaming, you know, just glowing in the woods. That's always, every time I see the first time each year when I see the crown of one of them's head come through the woods, that's what gets me. Yeah, I'm with you.
Well, let's move on. I got another question for you here.
Okay.
What do you think are some of the biggest mistakes that you see turkey hunters make?
Well, for one, like we've talked about already a bunch, is they don't scout. They don't put time in before season. And the next one is I just my opinion, I think a lot of turkey hunters ruin their ground.
Yes.
They overhunt, overcall their ground right off the bat. And I'm telling you, man, if a turkey isn't bothered, he can respond really good and he's very killable. You let a turkey get a little bit of pressure on him, get bumped once or twice, he turns into a different animal. He just does.
Yep.
And that's one of the biggest things. And two, John, you know this. I mean, hey, from the time we started, the equipment and the gear is good night. It's so much better. You look at decoys, it's, one of the biggest things that's changed. And they help so much. But I don't think people realize how good turkeys see.
Right.
And people think they can just set up anywhere. Them birds, if they can get your outline, your skyline a little bit in a fence row, or you're set up to where that bird sees you move just a little, man, it don't take nothing to get them weary and nervous. And so I would have to say over hunting ground and their setup, not being hid in their setups.
Right. Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I think probably the biggest thing is, and some people don't have as much ground as others to hunt.
That's right.
Especially if you just got one place to hunt, you kind of got to throw all your eggs in one basket. But man, we talked about it earlier. If you get on a bird and you know it's not going to work out, don't keep hammering him. I think that's the number one thing is doing too much. You got to be low impact. It's a short season. But at the same time, it's a long season.
It's a long season. That's right.
You don't want to be caught up in that third week hunting the same bird that you've messed up on four times.
He's heard you run this, your slate call for 3 weeks now. That's right.
He knows that hen, don't he?
I tell you something else, that you and I have seen when we've hunted with other people. And, you might go up and say you haven't even called yet. You walk in a field and you just walk up on a gobbler and a hen or something. You bump them out of the field. Don't go up there and start calling. You know what I mean? Because that turkey, he's not associating you with danger in your turkey calling right then. He didn't know if you were somebody working on the power line or the farmer. He don't know what you are. They're just going to ease off and probably be fine. But as soon as they get bumped, you start calling, all of a sudden he ties that sound he's hearing to being bumped. Just let them birds rest. And by next morning, you can probably go in there and get on him, to be honest.
That's key. I mean, that's just being reckless when you do that. A lot of people don't think about that.
Yeah.
But that bird is spooked. If you back out, everything's going to be all right because they're used to getting spooked by something daily. But if you go up there and spook them and then say, I can still kill him, and start cutting at him and calling, you hurt yourself so bad. You don't realize it, but you really hurt yourself when you do
that. You're hurting yourself. Exactly right.
That's the same thing for coyotes, too. Turkeys and coyotes actually have a lot in common when it comes to calling.
Yeah.
They learn quickly on stuff like that, and they become very call shy. And when a turkey or a coyote becomes call shy, they can come very, very, very hard to hunt and get killed, and sometimes impossible to get killed when you're talking about calling them up.
That's right. I mean, and going back to and you're right. Some people don't have access to a lot of ground and different things. But John, you remember when we got into this, we didn't have no whole lot of ground to hunt that had turkeys.
No. And probably one of the best spots we had to hunt was a little piece of ground your grandpa owned. It wasn't but 32 acres.
That's right. And so that's, and really going back to it, that's one of the times I feel like I really learned how to become a good turkey hunter, because you start thinking about it, it's just like, okay, wait a minute now. I've got, I've scouted before season and I've got three turkeys. I've got two tags, but I've only got three turkeys that I can legit hunt.
Yeah.
So I have to be very smart about this. So just because you don't have a whole lot of ground to hunt, it just means you have to hunt smarter, in my opinion.
Yeah.
It's easy to watch shows and stuff and talk about running and gun, and everybody likes to run and gun and strike one, have him run over you. But if you don't have the land that aids in that, don't do it.
Right.
You have hunt your properties how they need to be hunted. And that's a big, like, just going back to what we've talked about, that's a big difference in success and failure and ruining a spot real quick.
I think that's the reason that some of these public land spots, it can be good for turkey hunting, kind of get a bad rap, is because people being too reckless or being too aggressive. Right. Yep. You know, you always got your newcomers to the sports that just make mistakes. I make mistakes every year. I'm liable to make some more this spring. I mean, that's just going to happen. But
it's going to happen. And that's, that's how you learn. That's, you know, it's the reason we know what not to do now, is because we made those mistakes.
Yeah. Well, that's good stuff. Yeah. I totally agree with you. I think the biggest mistake that turkey hunters make, myself, is, you know, you hear people talking about overcalling and this type of stuff all the time. No, it's trying to do too much, trying to hunt birds when you know you can't get them killed, bumping birds and then calling to them, just that type of stuff, being just a little too extra, I guess would say.
That's right.
But that's good stuff. Let me, we're about running out of time here. We've been on here quite a while. It's easy to get deep into a podcast when you're talking about something you love, that's for sure. But
I can sit here and talk to you all day about turkey.
Well, I'm going to talk to you about turkey calls a little bit. I just got a question for you right here.
Yeah,
we're winding down. You know, you've been running some Fox Pro calls for the last 5 years, I guess. If I put a challenge out there to you, say, Bo, this year for strutting in the bluegrass, you can only take 3 calls out there with you. I'm talking about, ooh, I'm not talking about a combo pack and another combo pack. I'm talking about individual calls. If you can go out, if turkey season was coming in the morning, you was going to go out there and hunt, what 3 calls are you taking with you?
Well, I would say it's hard, but I feel pretty certain I know which ones I would take, to be honest. There's two diaphragms. One is it's called a wide V cut. Ever since you started running, it's one of the Ghost Spur. I think it's out of the Ghost Spur combo pack. It's a wide V cut. Really, really like that call. And then there's a V cut slash, I think is what it's called. That's another diaphragm that I've found that I really love. And then I'm taking one friction call, and it's actually that honeypot, and it's actually glass with a little slate. You flip it over, and it's got a little slate surface.
The bittersweet.
And that, you know, I guess because they've only got 3, so I'm combining, you know, 2 there, I guess. But that glass, I can, you know, it's super clear. It can get a very clear note. It cuts good. And then, like I said, you flip it over, and you got that little slate surface.
It's a 2-in-1.
Yeah, for clucks and purrs, tree yelps. It's like I said, you know, there's different, you know, there's still other calls of theirs I really like. But those 3, if I was just taking 3, I would say it would be those 3 right there.
So those 2 diaphragms and a bittersweet. Yep. Well, you still got all kinds of room in your turkey vest there. So I'm going to give you one more option. You get to take a 4th one. What's it going to be?
Oh, good night. You know, I love diaphragms, mouth calls. And you've put me on the spot. Now I can't remember the name of this one. It's the white with the orange latex. It's a little combo cut.
Oh, the with the white tape?
No, it's white tape, but it's got orange latex as with the reed with the cut in it.
Yeah, it's like a cutter style call.
Yes.
Smaller tape. Yep. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a really, really nice diaphragm there for sure. Definitely one of my favorites. That combo pack has got 3 diaphragms in it, and they look like they're a small frame, but they're actually a regular frame call, but they're smaller tape. The tape's cut down.
Yeah. Right. That one is one of my, like I said, whenever you first gave me 3, it was hard for me not to include it there, but I knew I wanted a friction call with me. But if that was, and like I said, I'm looking at it. I can look at it in my head right now, but I can't remember the exact name of it. But that would be the one I would take. I mean, you know, and I'll tell you, whenever we started that strut, and, you know, Fox Pro was the, you know, a sponsor of it. And I didn't even know Fox Pro made turkey calls. and I was not, I'm just being honest. I was,
and not to, not to cut you off here, but that combo pack is the hybrid spur combo pack. That's got
hybrid
that,
spur, okay.
That white tape diaphragm we're talking about.
But go ahead. I love that. I love that diaphragm. But yeah, so I, you know, I didn't know anything about Fox Pro and their turkey calls, and I was a little bit hesitant. And I'm telling you, I've been more than impressed with their turkey lineup. I really have. And the thing with their diaphragms that has, I'm as impressed with as anything, is how well they hold up.
Yep.
Other companies I was using, I'm telling you, I was having a, before season, if I had a certain diaphragm I liked, I would buy three of them because I knew they would, the latex would tear and I would have to have more. And Fox Pro, it has amazed me at how good they hold up all year. It really has. It's a very they're I don't think they get enough credit for their turkey calls. Just well, being,
I tell you what, it's, you know, I see it a lot. Talk about turkey season coming up and running Fox Pro calls, and they'll get the question: you're going to use your electronic call to try to call in turkeys? Well, one thing is there is a handful of states that do allow electronic calls for turkeys.
Yeah. Yeah.
But other than that, I'm like, you know, hunting here in Kentucky, of course, it's not legal in the surrounding states that we hunt. But the thing is, like, no, we're going to use Fox Pro turkey calls.
We're going to use turkey calls.
Y'all make turkey calls? Like, yeah, we got a full lineup of diaphragms with three different combo packs and several individuals. We got a great friction call line with you know, with all the honeypot series. We got a slate. We got a crystal. We got a glass call, like you said, the glass with the slate on the bottom, the bittersweet, and we also got two box calls.
That's and I'll tell you, like I said earlier, my son's 15, so this is his last year youth hunting. But his mama told him last year after he killed one, she said that's it. She said your daddy's not calling no more in for you. She said you're gonna have to learn to do it yourself. And so he's been practicing, and you know, and you go back to ease of use for a new turkey hunter. That I don't think you can beat a slate call.
No.
And like I said, going back to Fox Pro slate, he was, you know, I put it in his hand a couple of weeks ago and he had never really tried it much. And in a matter of minutes,
he had a very
decent sounding yelp coming off that thing. So it's, you know, that's, I would say this, if I'm a new turkey hunter, that slate call is, I think it sounds realistic and super easy to use.
Yep. And talking about the box, you know, everybody can run a box call. And that's, you know, it's your traditional style box call, but it's actually got a striker stuck up in the bottom of it there, and it's got a piece of slate. It's like a rectangular piece of slate on the bottom side of the box, and that's called the counter strike. You'll want to check it out. It's pretty nifty little box call for sure.
And I'll tell you, not to turn this into, you know, just talking about props, but I mean this. You talk about those friction calls are quality calls.
Oh, they're money.
You go compare them to some of the other high end turkey calls and look at price. Hey. Fox Pro is as fair priced as you'll find, in my opinion. I was just yesterday at work. A guy was talking to me about turkey calls, and he was asking me what I use. And like you said, he knew coyote calls and stuff like that from Fox Pro. I said, I use Fox Pro calls. And so I got him online. He was looking at me. He said, oh, yeah. He said, that's a lot better price than what he was looking at. You know, so I'm like, you know, for the quality that they are, they're very, very fair priced.
Hey. And that call that's might be a little bit cheaper than some of these other brands, guess what? It probably won't sound better too.
Right.
If you don't believe me, you go listen, you go watch all these Fox Pro turkey hunts we've been putting out the last couple of years.
Yep.
Listen to the calling, check out the results. Go watch the last three seasons of Strutting in the Bluegrass. I think the first season we put four big old toms on the ground, and next season we put six or seven. Y'all
six
put seven on there last year. I mean, you know, the things work.
On every one of them, and, you know, I can't remember the exact name of it, John, but that first year, there's a slate. I still got it down there, and I still sneak it in my vest every now and then. It's a Fox Pro slate, and on the bottom, it's got the emblem of the turkey skull, that's still one of my favorites.
Yeah, we're still using it. We discontinued that call. It was a great pot call, too.
I love that thing.
We pretty much just went to a different style pot. You know, it's made out of honey locust. Yep. Still the same material on top, the friction material, but we redesigned the pot style and stuff like that. That honey pot series is pretty slick. It's pretty stout.
Yep, absolutely.
Well, Bo, tell us, tell us where we can watch Strutting in the Bluegrass. It's coming up. Tell us where we can watch it before we get off here, so everybody can check you out.
Yeah, the easiest way to do it is, you know, there's three ways: Kentucky Department of Fish and Wildlife's Facebook page, Instagram, or their YouTube channel. That's where, going back to what we said earlier, first 7 days of Kentucky season, which starts April 15th, each night we will air that day's action. So it's basically a live day by day series that we'll be putting out. So I would love for, absolutely. Anybody that wants to tune in and keep up with us, greatly appreciate it. And like you said, heck, you can go back to their Facebook page and find videos. You can go back and watch all of them, or go on YouTube and get to the Strutting series, and they're all on there.
Yep.
So absolutely.
That's right. You can go back and watch the last three seasons, a lot of awesome turkey hunting action on there. You can go to all the Fox Pro stuff. Check out our turkey hunts from the last couple of years. We're on Carbon TV, Roku, and YouTube. Like I said, Kentucky Department of Fish and Wildlife, Strutting in the Bluegrass, brought to you by Fox Pro Game Call, starts April 15th. First 7 days, you're going to be able to see some live turkey hunting action from the Bluegrass State. Guarantee you're going to see a lot of hard gobbling, hard strutting, big old Kentucky longbeards get to flopping. They guarantee it. And we hope you guys have enjoyed this episode, and you hope you join us again right here on the Fox Pro Podcast.